school was until I moved to Washington halfway through my senior year. My experience in Washington was so different. Nora walks over to the utility closet and grabs the broom and dustpan. She starts to sweep the floor, and I prepare to fill the silence with more ramblings about my high school days as I wet a paper towel and clean the rest of the counter. "Nothing is worse than a bunch of assholes who peak in high school," she observes. I bark out a little laugh. That's one of the truest things I've ever heard. "I guess I wasn't missing much," Nora says, her eyes distant. She has that expression on her face again, the one that looks like she's grown bored. "Did you always want to be a pastry chef?" I ask. The sugar is close to being cleaned up now, but I don't want the conversation to end. I almost wish there was another bag of something for me to accidentally dump on the floor. I've never heard Nora talk this much before, aside from her and Tessa gushing over the two boys kissing on that demon hunting show Tessa's obsessed with. Usually, I'm never part of their conversations. I'm in my room studying or at work when she's here. And now that we are alone, and she's being uncharacteristically chatty, I want to gather in as many words as she's willing to say. She moves the broom across the tile floor and looks over at me. "Thanks for remembering not to call me a baker. And no, I actually wanted to be a surgeon, like my dad. And his dad, and his dad." "A surgeon?" That's the last thing I expected her to say. "Really?" "Don't be so surprised. I'm actually very intelligent." She cocks her head to the side, and I decide that I really like her playful attitude. It's different from Dakota's, not as harsh or as hard. Dakota. I haven't thought about her once in the last 30 minutes. And her name sounds foreign inside my head. Does that make me a bad guy? Naked with her one minute, not thinking about her the next? Is she sitting at home waiting for me to call her? Somehow I doubt that. "I'm not doubting that," I raise a sugary hand to her. "I just thought you would say something more art-related." Nora regards me with a thoughtful look on her face. Why is that?" She rests the broom on the counter and leans closer to me to turn on the faucet. Her arm brushes against the fabric of my sweatshirt and I move out of her way. "I don't know, I just picture you being some sort of artist." I run my hand over my hair and little bits of sugar fall onto the floor. "I don't really know what I'm talking about."
"You should have taken that off before I swept."
Nora's fingers wrap around a string from my sweatshirt, and I look down, watching her hand. "Probably," I say, and she takes a step closer. I hold my breath. Her eyes catch mine, and she sucks in a quiet breath between her teeth.
"Sometimes it feels like you know me more than you should," she whispers, and I can't move. I can't breathe. Or move, or even speak when she's this close. Even with sugar covering her, she's so painfully stunning that I can barely look at her. "Maybe I do," I tell her, somehow feeling the same. Truthfully, I barely know anything about her. But maybe it isn't about knowing the factual things. Maybe it doesn't matter if I know her mom's name or her favorite color. Maybe it doesn't take years to know people like we assume. Maybe the important things are much, much simpler. Maybe it matters more that we see deeper, that we know what kind of friend they are, or that they bake cakes for people they don't know without being asked.
"You shouldn't," she says, still staring up at me. Without thinking, I take a step closer to her and she closes her eyes. "Maybe I should." I don't know who I am in this moment. I don't feel nervous about being so close to such a beautiful woman. I don't feel like I'm not good enough to be touching her face. I barely have any thoughts running through my mind. I like the silence inside my head that she seems to bring.
"We can't," she says, in a voice that's barely audible. Her eyes are still shut and my hand is on her cheek without me even knowing that I put it there. My thumb traces the outline of her pouty mouth, and I can feel the quickening of her pulse where my palm rests on her neck. "Maybe we can," I whisper. In this moment, all I know in the world is that her hands are gripping the fabric of my sweatshirt, and despite the doubt in her words, she's pulling me closer. "You don't know how bad I am for you." The words rush out of her mouth and her eyes peer open just a fraction, and my heart swells. There's pain there, a deep pain shredded through the dark green and the flakes of brown. Her pain is visible to me for the first time, and I can feel the weight of it in her hooded gaze. Something shifts and locks into place inside of me, and I don't have the words to explain it. I want to heal her. I want her to know that everything will be okay. I want her to know that pain is only permanent if we allow it to be. I don't know the origin of hers, but I'm certain that I would do anything to take it away from her. My shoulders can bear the weight of her pain. They are strong, built for supporting, and I need her to know that. I feel fiercely protective of her now, as if she's been mine to guard for my entire existence. "You don't know what you're getting into," Nora warns, and I quiet her with my thumb against her lips. She parts them under my touch and exhales a quiet sigh. "I don't care," I say, and mean it. Her eyes close again and she pulls me closer, closer until our bodies are pressed together, molded like they're supposed to be, like they were made to be. I lean down and lick my lips, and she whimpers as if she's been waiting an eternity for my lips to find hers. And it does feel that way. I feel a powerful sense of relief, like I've found a part of me that I didn't know was missing. I rest my hand on her cheek, and there's barely an inch between our mouths. She's breathing so softly, as if I'm the fragile one, and she's being careful not to break me. Her lips taste like sugar, and she's my favorite dessert. I'm gentle with her, gently pressing my lips against the corners of her mouth, and she makes a noise in the back of her throat that makes my head swim. I feel dizzy when my mouth opens and her tongue gently meets mine. It's the best kind of disoriented, and I never want to think straight again. The hand of mine that's not on her cheek moves to her back, and I press her soft body against mine until there's not a single inch between us. Through her soft lips, she whispers my name, and I've never felt this type of rush before. She pulls away for a moment, and I feel lost, like I'm swimming out in the middle of nowhere. And when her mouth finds mine again, she's found me and anchored me to her. A vibration buzzes against the counter, and the music I had forgotten was even playing fades out. It's like I've lost the last few minutes of my life, but I never, ever want them back. I want to stay here, lost with her. But reality has other plans, and Nora pulls away, taking the silence in my mind with her. She grabs her phone from the counter and looks at it quickly as she swipes her finger across the green circle. I lean against the counter to steady myself, and she apologizes and steps into the hallway. A few seconds of silence pass, and I can hear her talking, but I can't make out any of the words. Her voice gets louder, and I force myself not to move closer to eavesdrop on our conversation. "I have to go," she says when she comes back into the room. "But I'll be back in the morning to help you decorate the cake. I'll wrap it up so it won't get stale." She moves across my kitchen, and I notice the change in her demeanor. Her shoulders are slouched, and every time I try to catch her eyes, she avoids mine. A thrumming rises in my chest. "Is everything okay? Is there anything I can do to help?" I ask. I decide in this moment that there are only a few things in this world that I wouldn't do for her. I know I'm insane and that I barely know her. I'm aware that it's hard to protect someone that won't allow you to. I'm also aware that I have a messy on-and-off relationship with someone else. But there's nothing I can do to go back now. I can't make the last few minutes disappear, and even if I could, I never would. Everything is fine. I just have to go back to Lookout. My boss needs me, she says with a weak smile I can see right through. I stand in silence as she layers saran wrap around the cake pan and grabs her shirt from the back of the chair. She tucks her tie into the back pocket of her black pants and walks to the entry of the kitchen. Her eyes still won't meet mine, and it makes my stomach hurt. Don't worry about those dishes. I'll get them in the morning. I nod, not knowing what else to say. The bliss from our kiss is evaporating faster than I can blink, and the endless questions I have for her are filling my head. I'm sorry, she says, and I truly feel like she means it. At least there's that. She disappears through the doorway, and I stand still for a few minutes, recollecting every moment we just shared. From the sweet taste of her sugary kiss to the desperation in her fingers as she clutched the fabric of my sweatshirt. The apartment is so silent, unlike my mind, and I turn on the faucet and open the door to the dishwasher. I toss out the uneaten broccoli and put the olive oil back into the cabinet. By the time Tessa gets home, I'm still sitting in the kitchen at the table. The dishes are clean and put away, and there's no trace of powdered sugar anywhere to be found. She unties her apron and lays it on the back of the chair. Hey, what are you doing up? I look at the time on the stove. It's nearly 1 in the morning. I don't know, I lie. She's having a hard enough time lately. I don't want to burden her with my problems, especially when I don't even understand them. Tessa looks at me, and I can see the speculation in her eyes. She glances around the room and spots the cake on the counter. Where's Nora? She asks. My throat is dry as I explain. She came by for a little bit, then she got called back to work.
Back to work? By who?
I just left there, and Robert and I were the last people there. I should be surprised by this, but I'm not. I wave an unconcerned hand. I must have heard her wrong. How was work? I change the subject, and Tessa lets me. Chapter 28. The morning came faster than I expected. When I wake up, I lie in bed for a while, just staring at my ceiling fan. I wonder who lived here before me, and why they decided to paint the fan mismatching colors. Every blade is a different color. Blue, then green, then purple, then yellow, and lastly red. I wonder if it was a child's room. If not, the inhabitants must have had quite the quirky side. I don't know what time it is when I finally push myself to get out of bed. All I know is that I'm exhausted, like I've been through a war in the night. When I grab my phone to check the time, it's dead. I plug it into the charger and make my way to the living room. The living room is dark and the television is on. Tessa's sleeping on the couch and an episode of Cupcake Wars is playing on the screen, the volume low. I grab the remote from where it lies on her stomach and turn off the TV. She's still wearing her work uniform. She must have been drained by the time she got home. I could tell by the way her eyes were closing while she ate the plate of food she brought from work last night. We sat at the table for less than 30 minutes and she gave me a play-by-play of her night. A group of professors from NYU came in 20 minutes before closing and sat in her section. It had to have bothered her a little, even though she didn't say that they were from NYU, since the university hasn't accepted her yet. I'm sure they will, just not for this semester. She doesn't want Ken to use his position at WCU to try to help her.
but I believe he's going to if they don't take her for the winter semester. It would be pretty cool to have her on campus with me, even though we have different majors. During our sophomore year, a few of our classes will overlap since I'm going for early childhood education and she's going for English. I walk into the kitchen to check the time. It's only 8. It's sort of weird that the stove is our only clock in the entire apartment. We rely on our phones to tell us the time. I wonder how the clock business is handling that. It would be so strange to live in a time when you have to walk into a building or the town square to check the clock. And what if it was wrong? You wouldn't even know. If Harden lived back then, I could see him having the wrong time on all his clocks just to mess with people. I really need to tell Tessa that Harden's coming next weekend. I'll tell her when she wakes up. I will. Really, this time. The kitchen is quiet. Only the soft buzzing from the fridge is audible. The undecorated cake is still sitting on the counter, covered in saran wrap. I wonder if Nora's going to come back, or if whatever took her away last night will keep her today. I look in the fridge for something to eat before I start getting ready for work. Fuck. Work. I was supposed to be there at 6 today to cover Posey's shift. I rush to my room to grab my phone to call my boss. My foot catches on something hard and I stumble over it and try to balance on one foot. Of course, that doesn't work and my toes smash into the leg of my desk. Damn it, it hurts. I grab my foot and finally reach my phone. Of course, it's still dead. Double damn it. I'll have to use Tessa's phone to call work. I toss my phone at the bed and bounce on one foot out to the living room, my toes still throbbing. When I reach Tessa's sleeping body on the couch, I scan her and the furniture. Her cell has to be around here somewhere. Why didn't I listen to my mom about getting a landline? You never know what could happen, Landon. The cell service could stop working. You may lose that cell phone and have to use the landline to call and find it. The aliens could invade Brooklyn and steal all technology to further their plan of taking over Earth for their evil doings. Okay, so I made the last one up when I teased her about her concern. However, this is one of the many times in my life when I've come to realize that my mother usually knows what the heck she's talking about. Most 20-year-olds would never admit it, but I'm smart enough to know that I'm lucky to have a parent like her. I spot Tessa's phone wedged between the back of the couch and her hip. I slowly reach for it and hold my breath, trying not to wake her. Just as my fingertips reach the phone and I grab hold of it, Tessa's body jerks and her eyes dart open. I pull back and give her time to understand that it's only me and that she's asleep on the couch in her own living room. Are you okay? Tessa groans. Her voice sounds like she's still asleep. Yeah, sorry, my phone is dead and I'm late for work. She nods and reaches her phone out to me. I take it and go to dial the number, but I'm asked for the passcode. Tessa starts naming numbers and I type them in quickly. 0201, she says and closes her eyes. She rolls on her side and lifts her knees up toward her chest. Thanks. I grab the blanket from the back of the couch and drape it over her. She thanks me with a smile and I unlock her phone. Her phone feels weird in my hand. It's so small compared to mine. She teases me for the size of mine, calling it an iPad, and I tease her for always breaking or losing hers. I bring up the one she dropped in the toilet, the one that went missing in an Uber, the one that she threw at a spider on the rooftop of our building. The only one left, the one I won't mention, was her first phone. That's the one whose screen she busted purposely and stomped it under her feet at least 20 times. I came home from work to find her smashing it. She swore she was never going to use an iPhone again, and I had my suspicions that it had nothing to do with the technology. Rather, it's the same reason she only drinks cold coffee now. The same reason she can barely listen to her favorite band anymore. She quickly gave up on her promise after using another phone for a week. She lost all of her music, all of the information she had saved, all of her auto-login websites, her saved credit cards. She cursed Apple all the way to the store, saying that they are taking over the world, and it pissed her off that they have such good products because they leave consumers no other choice but to use them. Quite the paradox. She also mentioned more than a few times that they should make more affordable products. I agreed. When I get to the call screen, I realize I don't know the number to grind by heart. I usually rely on the number already in my phone. I can barely remember the days before smartphones took over the world. I did have an old Nokia when I was 12 that my mom made me bring with me everywhere I went, just in case something happened. I used to kill the battery playing Snake all day. Man, I feel old. What the heck would we do without technology? I'm ashamed of my reliance on it. But at the same time, I cringe at the thought of having to find a phone book and search for the number to my work. Man, we humans are spoiled. Scratch that. We Americans are spoiled. There are many, many places in the world where people have never even seen an iPhone, and here I am pondering my existence without Apple products. I have it pretty damn easy. I Google the number for Grind, and when I call, the line goes straight to busy. What the hell? I don't even have Posey's number. Again, technology is hindrance. I used to have all my friends' phone numbers memorized. It helped that I only had two friends, and they lived in the same house, but still. I'm just going to hurry and get dressed and run there, I explain in a rush. I set Tess's phone on the coffee table and walk to my room. My toes still hurt. If I leave now, I can get there in less than 15 minutes. I could be halfway there already if I'd just gotten dressed instead of trying to call them. I glance at the phone on my bed. I also could have used my phone by now if I'd left it on the charger. You win some, you lose some. I rush around my room and throw on dark jeans and a plain gray t-shirt. I hurry to the bathroom and brush my teeth. I take a piss and wash my hands. Without even looking in the mirror, I shut the light off and go back into the living room. The feeling is coming back to my toes, and I'm glad since I have to practically run there. I'm sure I look like complete hell, but once I get to work, I'll run my fingers through my hair or something. My shoes. Where are my shoes? I scan my floor and look inside my closet. Living room. They must be by the door. Where they belong. I hear Tess's voice in my head and laugh to myself. I'm at the door, pushing my feet into my sneakers in less than 5 minutes since I tried to call Grind. I grab my keys and yank the door open to find someone standing in front of me. Nora. With a trash bag in one arm and a box at her feet. Her eyes widen when she sees me and I look down at the box. There's a book, a picture frame, and some random stuff that's unidentifiable and buried. Hi. Nora's lips shape the word, and she stares at me with what looks like hesitation. Hi, I respond, trying to piece together what she's doing here. With her stuff. Are you okay? I ask her, and she nods. Suddenly, her eyes well up with tears, and I watch her clench her free hand into a tight fist. She takes a deep breath, and just like that, she straightens her back and holds her tears at bay. Can I come in? Her voice is low, defeated, but she's putting on a good front. I bend down, grab the box, and hold it in one arm. I reach out my hand for her to give me the trash bag, and she does. Her eyes are hard. She's a fighter. I can see it in her eyes. Her bag is heavy, and I set it down on the living room floor next to my grandma's table. I lay the box down and wave for Nora to come inside. She steps in slowly, and Tessa sits up on the couch. I look at her phone on the table. Shit. I look at Nora apologetically. I have to go to work. I'm really late. She nods and smiles at me, but it's the smallest smile I've ever seen. The self-promises I made to protect her last night surge back up in my chest. I never want her to look this way, to feel this way. Tessa stands up and assesses the situation. I can't stay around for the explanation, even though it's going to drive me crazy to not know what's going on. What happened? Why is Nora here with her belongings? Was it something with Dakota? My stomach twists at the possibility. When I leave, will she tell Tessa that we kissed again? I wish I could stay, but I can't. Too many people are counting on me, and I've already messed up big time this morning. I rush down the hallway and take the stairs. I don't have time to wait for the world's smallest elevator to get to my floor. Chapter 29. When I push through the doors at Grind, the place is packed. Oh no. A long line is snaked around the shop, from the pastry display case to the pickup area. Women and men dressed in casual business clothing are scattered around the room, chattering and sipping on caffeine. As I scan the line, I notice a few irritated faces toward the back. I immediately walk through the crowd and go behind the counter. I don't even bother to grab an apron. Aiden is taking orders, his fingers quickly navigating the familiar register and his usual pale face bright red. His neck, too. Sweat has soaked through the back of his shirt. Well, shit. He's not going to be very happy with me. As I step up behind him, he hands a black-haired woman in a red pantsuit her change. For her part, the woman is clearly irritated, her hands moving around angrily in the space between them, trying to communicate her frustration, I guess. Hey, I'm here. Sorry, man. My phone died and my alarm. Save it. Aiden glares at me. Just help me get this line down, he says quietly. I wish I could call in Hermione to turn him into a ferret. Still, I nod, sort of understanding his frustration. This line is no joke, and sometimes people are just crappy. Aiden, shouts an order at me. Macchiato extra foam! I grab a small cup and get to work. As I steam the milk, I look back at Aiden. He's filthy. Black coffee grounds stain the front of his shirt, and he has a wet spot on his chest. It would be much more amusing if it wasn't my fault. If I'd arrived on time, we still would have been busy and overwhelmed, but it would have been much easier to handle with two people. As I pour the frothed milk over the dark espresso, Aiden gives me another order. We continue like this until the line shrinks down to three people. Aiden is calmer now, back to smiling and being friendly with customers. This is good news for me. It's helping keep my mind off of Nora showing up at my apartment, and the fact that I'm an idiot for not bringing my phone to text Tessa to make sure everything's all right. I could have found power for it somewhere. Every table is still full, and there are at least 20 people standing up, coffee in hand. I notice that they're all wearing lanyards and assume that it's the usual electronics conference that happens every couple of months nearby. It's a much bigger crowd than we usually get at one time, but it's good for business. That's another cool thing about New York City. There's always something going on. I start to refill the canisters of beans and wipe down the grinders while Aiden tackles the condiment station, refilling the creamers and restocking the 7 different types of sugar we offer. Before I moved to the city, I'd never seen a lump of sugar pressed into the shape of a cube, like on Bugs Bunny. I honestly thought that was just a cartoon shorthand. Back in Saginaw, every once in a while, I would hear a customer ordering a non-fat something or other, but that was about as complicated as it got in small-town Michigan. Dakota and I would sit in the local coffee house for hours. We would switch tables when we got tired of the view. We'd get a sugar high and walk home, holding hands and dreaming under the stars. My mind moves down that familiar memory lane, and I remember when Dakota and I got into a fight in Starbucks. I remember that her hair smelled like coconut and her new lip gloss was sticky. I chased her down the street and she sprinted, reminding me that she could run faster than anyone I knew. The track coach at our high school knew it too, not that Dakota was interested in sports. She would humor me and watch the meets with me and ask a million questions every time a whistle blew. She wanted to dance. She always knew it. I envied her that certainty. Dakota ran and ran farther away from the Starbucks, and I chased her as I always did. She turned a corner down an alleyway and I lost her. I felt like I couldn't breathe until I found her. It was too dark for her to be running through that part of town. I found her a few minutes later, right outside the patch. She was sitting on the ground next to a half-torn-down fence, the black of the woods behind her. The chain-link fence had huge holes in it, and it was dark outside, and after a minute I could finally breathe again. Dakota was picking at the gray rocks and tossing them into a pothole in the street. I remember how relieved I felt when I saw her. She was wearing a yellow shirt with a smiley face on it and glittery sandals. She was mad at me because I thought it was a bad idea to try to track down her mom. Yolanda Hunter had been gone for too many years. I felt that if she wanted to be found, she wouldn't be hiding. Dakota was angry, telling me I didn't understand what it was like to have no parents. Her mom ran away, leaving her children with a drunk father who liked to smack his son around. When I caught up with Dakota, she was crying, and it took her a few seconds to look at me. It's so strange the way my mind remembers the exact details of that night. I had started to get worried about her. Sometimes I would think she was going to disappear like her mom. "There's no proof that she wouldn't let me live with her," she told me that night. "And there's no proof that she would. I just want you to consider how you'll feel if she doesn't say what you want her to, or if she doesn't say anything at all," I said to her as I sat down next to her on the crunchy gravel. "I'll be fine. It couldn't possibly be worse than not knowing," she said. I remember grabbing her hand and that she laid her head on my shoulder. We sat in silence, both of our heads tilted up toward the sky. The stars were so bright that night. Sometimes, like that night, we wondered why the stars even bothered to shine over our town. "I think it's to torture us, to mock those of us who are stuck in bad places and living crappy lives," Dakota would say. I'd say something like, "No, I think they're there to give us hope, hope that there's more out there. Stars aren't evil like humans." She would look at me and squeeze my hand, and I would promise her that someday, somehow, we would get the hell out of Saginaw. She seemed to trust me. "Sorry it took so long," I recognized Posey's voice through the cloud of memories in my head. She's talking to Aiden. A woman in a black dress holds up a sign and tells everyone it's time to go. As the crowd spills out of the shop, I listen to the exchange between Posey and Aiden. He lifts his shirt up to wipe his sweaty face as she talks to him. "It's all right. Landon finally showed up." Posey's head turns and she finds me wiping a rag across the metal counter. "Not eavesdropping at all." "I'm so sorry," Posey says, walking toward me. Her hands are behind her back and she's tying her apron. Her red hair is up today, pulled back into a bun. "I could have sworn we switched shifts today. I must have forgotten to ask you," she explains. I shake the rag over the trash can before soaking it in the soap bucket. "No, we did switch. I was just out of it last night and let my phone die. Sorry you had to come all the way down here." She looks toward Aiden and I follow her eyes. He's not looking at either of us. He's talking to a customer about decaf coffee being despicable and pointless. "It's like alcohol-free beer. Waste of time," the middle-aged man Aiden's talking to says in a raspy voice. He looks like he's had a few beers today himself. "I kinda need the hours anyway," Posey whispers to me, and nods toward the table against the back wall, closest to the short hall that leads to the restroom. Her little sister, Lila, is sitting there patiently with her chin on the table. "I brought backup." She reaches into her pocket and pulls out three little cars. Hot Wheels, maybe? She likes cars. I smile at the little girl, but she doesn't notice. Posey nods. "Oh, yes, she does." "You sure you want to stay?" "I can. I don't have anything to do," I offer. The terribly selfish part of me wants her to stay so I can go see how Nora's doing. But I would never admit this out loud. Nope, I'm good, honestly. I only needed the 2 hours this morning for my grandma's doctor appointment. She's not doing very well.
Posey looks to her sister, and I can spot a hint of fear. As a college student working at a coffee shop, it would be nearly impossible for Posey to raise her little sister on her wages alone. I don't know too many of the details of her family life, but I assume that her parents aren't going to magically return. I can take Lila with me for a few hours. I'm just going back to my apartment. She can come there, or we can go to the park across the street. I wouldn't mind watching her for a little while so Posey can work the last 2 hours of her shift. And this means I can go back to my apartment. I'm a terrible person. Posey's eyes return to her sister every few seconds. She looks after her so well, even when she's working behind the counter. The little girl is still sitting with her chin resting adorably on the table.
Are you sure? You don't have to.
I know, I respond, but I'd like to help. Man, I'm going to hell for pushing this. Posey looks at her sister again and seems to consider the little girl's boredom.
Okay, but take her to your apartment. It's hot today and we were already out all morning, she laughs. It's too early for her to be worn out.
Got it. I'll clean up these tables before I go.
Thanks, Landon.
Posey smiles at me. Her freckles are extra noticeable today. It's cute. No prob, Bob. I grab the dish bucket and she lifts the divider and the cash wrap and waves me by. The tables are dirtier than I've ever seen them. I have to change towels 3 times to wipe up the spills and rings of coffee. At least the crowd is gone. Only 1 customer is left, a young hipster typing away on his little gold MacBook. He seems content. When I'm ready to go, Lila is still in the same seat. Her chin is no longer resting on the table. Instead, she's zooming a little purple car along its surface, making sound effects and all. Hey, Lila. Remember me? I ask her. Her little round face looks up at me and she nods. Cool. Do you want to hang out with me while your sister works? We can go to my house for a little bit. I have a friend who would love to meet you. I bend down to her level and she looks back at her car.
Yes.
Her voice is soft but clear. Posey says my name and I tell Lila that I'll be right back to get her. When I stand in front of Posey, she has a serious expression on her face.
You know how to be around kids, right? She's so young, and I trust you, otherwise there's no way I would ever leave her alone with you. But do you know how to handle kids? What to do if she's hungry or if she falls and scrapes her knee?
Posey's voice is low, and she sounds like a mom.
You have to hold her hand when you walk outside, at all times, and she only eats fries and peanut butter crackers.
I nod. Fries and peanut butter crackers at all times. Hold hand, don't let her fall down. She's too young to write my essays for me. Got it. I grin at her and she sighs, smiling at me.
You're sure?
She asks again.
Positive.
Call me if you need anything, she says. I nod and promise her over and over that everything will be fine. I don't tell her that my phone is at my apartment. But I'm going straight there, and telling her that I won't be reachable until I'm home will only make her more panicky, if that's possible. Posey explains to Lila that she's going to work for a little bit, then come to my house and pick her up. Lila doesn't seem to mind one bit. When I say goodbye to Aiden, I notice a deep purple mark on the side of his neck, just above the collar of his shirt. My stomach turns a little, and I try not to picture the type of woman he brings home. During the walk to my apartment, Lila holds my hand and points to and names every bus, van, and ambulance as they pass. Any car with lights on it qualifies as an ambulance in her book. The walk is quick and she's chatty, though it's hard to make out some of her words. As I look around, it seems like there are a ton of women out and about today. Either that, or women really do pay more attention to men with kids. I've gotten more smiles and more highs in the last 20 minutes than I have since I moved here. weird. It's like in that movie with the dog, where Owen Wilson's friend uses his puppy to get attention from women. Probably best I don't compare kids to puppies, though. When we reach my building, I let Lila press the button on the elevator and I count the seconds as it climbs to my floor. I really hope Nora is still here. The TV is on when we walk through the door. Tessa is still on the couch, her hair pulled on top of her head. She still looks tired when she sits up to greet our guest. She's sitting alone, I notice immediately. "Well, hi," she says with a smile for Lila. Lila waves and pulls her blue car from the pocket of her tiny jeans. This is Posey's little sister. I'm keeping an eye on her for the next hour and a half or so. This seems to wake her up a little. She beams and waves at Lila. "What's your name?" Lila doesn't answer. She just sits down on the floor and starts rolling her car around our printed rug, making little noises as she drives the car along the lines. "She's adorable," Tessa observes. I nod in agreement. I'm going to put my phone on the charger and run to the bathroom. Can you watch her for a minute? I try not to make it obvious when I scan the room for Nora for the second time. "Of course," Tessa says, and I go into my room and plug in my phone. My bed isn't made and my laptop is open on the floor next to it. Good thing I didn't step on it when I was rushing around this morning. I wait a minute or two for my phone to turn on so I can text Posey and tell her that we made it just fine. No falls, no problems whatsoever. But when my phone turns on, I see I have a text from Nora. "Please don't tell Tessa anything. She doesn't need the drama right now." Straight face. I reply, asking her where she went. A few seconds pass and I don't get a response, so I text Posey and leave my phone to charge for a little bit. I glance out into the living room and then go into the bathroom and close the door behind me. While I'm washing my hands, the door opens and Nora appears in the mirror. Chapter 30. I stare into the mirror for a few seconds, and Nora stares back at me. She doesn't move closer. She just stands in the doorway with her eyes on mine. Without looking away from her, I turn off the water and grab a towel to dry my hands. She must have been in Tessa's room when I arrived. "Hi," Nora's reflection says. "Hi," I repeat. We seem to be saying this a lot today. "What happened?" I ask. I'd planned on waiting for her to volunteer the information, but I couldn't stop myself from blurting out the question. She takes a deep breath, and I watch her chest rise and fall. I turn around, and she takes a few steps into the bathroom and closes the door behind her. When she approaches me, she seems subdued, not the same woman who was in my kitchen last night. Her hands are held in front of her, not clenching my sweatshirt. Her lips are pursed, not kissing me. Nora's hair is tied into a braid and resting over one shoulder. She's not wearing any makeup, and I notice a few freckles on her cheeks. Her eyes look tired, giving away that she hasn't slept much. She's wearing a white t-shirt, another one that hangs off of one shoulder, and black leggings. Her feet are covered in pizza print socks. This is the second time I've seen her wear odd socks. I like them. "I'm okay," Nora says and licks her lips. I reach for her hand and pull her closer to me. She hesitates for a moment, then steps to me. "The trash bag full of clothes says otherwise, Nora. You don't seem okay." I raise my free hand and touch the end of her braid. Her eyelids fall closed. "You can talk to me, you know that, don't you?" I take my hand from her hair and lift up her chin, just slightly, so I can get a good look at her. Tired-looking blue circles line the bottom of her almond-shaped eyes. They're puffy and my stomach aches at the thought that she's been crying. I run the pad of my thumb over one of her closed eyes and her lips part. Her eyelashes are so long that they remind me of the feathers on a bird. A very,
very pretty bird. Oh, my mind is in a weird place. She nods, and I move my thumb back under her chin. Her eyes open, just enough for me to see that she's hiding something. Her voice is soft, and she moves her face away from my touch when she says plainly, "I'm taking care of it." I take a step back, wanting to give her space, and she surprises me by grabbing my shirt and pulling me closer. She wraps her arms around my back and buries her head in my chest. She doesn't cry, she just stands there, taking shallow breaths and not speaking. I rub one hand up and down her back, letting her have the silence she seems to be wanting. After a few more seconds, she raises her head and stares up at me. "I want to take care of you," my heart says. Then my mouth says the same. She takes in my words, her eyes pouring into mine. "I don't want to be taken care of." Her honesty stings, but I have to remember that she's a few years older than me and has been doing this life thing by herself for a while. "I don't want my parents' help. I don't want your help. I don't want anyone's help. I just want to figure my shit out and cause the least amount of problems possible along the way. I will only bring you trouble. It's what I do. It's who I am. I'm not saying this to be dramatic. I'm serious, Landon." She looks at me, her eyes begging me to listen, to really listen. "I carry too much baggage, and I'm not looking for a knight in shining armor to rescue me." I don't know what to say. I don't know how to fix this, or if she even needs to be fixed. I'm not used to not being needed. I've always been the fixer. Who I am without that role? I don't know. "I know, princess," I say, trying to add a little humor, break some of this tension I don't know what to do with. "Ew," she makes a face of pure disgust. "I'm no princess." "What are you then?" I ask her, genuinely wondering how she views herself. "A human." There's more to her words than sarcasm. "I'm no damsel in distress, no princess. I'm a woman who is human in every sense of the word." My eyes meet hers, and she hugs me again. "Can we just stand like this for a few seconds? Can you just hold me for a few seconds so I can memorize how it feels?" I hate that her words sound so ominous, like she's saying more than goodbye. I don't respond. I just hold her in my arms until she lets go a few seconds later. "I wish you would tell me what's going on," I finally say when she pulls away. Her eyes don't meet mine when she says, "So do I." Nora stands up straight and opens her eyes wide. "Okay, let's decorate this cake and give Ellen the best birthday of her life." The change in her demeanor is immediate and total. It worries me how quickly she can shut down and change the subject. I want more from Nora. I want answers. I want to know the magnitude of her problem so I can offer a solution. I want to hold her in my arms until she believes that I'll be there for her. I want to kiss her pain away and make her laugh until she forgets why she keeps herself hidden from me. I want her to know that I see her, even though she doesn't want me to. I want so many things, but I can't want them alone. She has to want them too. But I give her the response she seems to need right now and plaster a fake smile on my face. "Let's." I raise my hand to high-five her, and she cracks a smile. She lifts her hand to mine and smacks it. "You're the corniest person I know," she says, opening the bathroom door. I follow behind her. "I'm fine with that." And just like that, we're friends again. Tessa and Lila are still in the living room when we walk down the hallway together. Lila is still entranced by her car, and Tessa is still cross-legged on the couch, watching the little girl with a big smile on her face. Tessa looks at me, then at Nora, then back to me. Her face doesn't hide the curiosity or her suspicion, but she doesn't say a word. Lila? I bend down to talk to the little girl. We're going to decorate a cake. Do you want to come into the kitchen with us? Lila looks up at me and grabs her car. Car? She chirps, holding the shiny Hot Wheel up to show me. Yep, you can take your car with you. I reach for her hand and she takes mine. I'm going to close my eyes for a few more minutes and rest, Tessa says, lying back down. I tell her to go back to sleep, and I walk Lila into the kitchen. Nora follows. Well, hi, beautiful. What's your name? Nora asks. Lila doesn't look at her, but she says her name and sits down at the table. What a beautiful name. Do you like cake? Nora asks her. Lila doesn't answer. I touch Nora's arm to get her attention. She turns to me, and I hold my hand up to block my mouth from Lila as I speak. She's autistic, I explain. Realization dawns on Nora's face, and she nods and sits down next to Lila at the table. Cool car, she says to her. Lila smiles and rolls the car over Nora's hand, saying, Zoom, zoom. I take it as her stamp of approval. Do you remember how to make the icing? Nora asks from her seat at the table. I nod. Powdered sugar, butter, vanilla, and something else. I can't recall the last ingredient, even though we had to make this stuff just last night. Milk. I nod. Right, milk, and 17 drops of food coloring. She glares at me. 1 or 2 drops. Okay, so 10 drops. I get it. She laughs, rolling her eyes. I watch as a sparkle of life comes back to them. 2 drops. I walk over to the cabinet and grab the box of food coloring. Well, if I'm supposed to get this right, I may need supervision. Do you know any bakers? Take that, pastry chef. She shakes her head. Nope, sure don't. Sorry. A playful smile lights up her face. I sigh dramatically and grab a new bag of powdered sugar from the cabinet. That's too bad. I can't promise I won't mess this up. Nora watches me with amusement in her eyes. He's an awful baker, she loudly whispers to Lila. Lila looks at her and smiles. I wave a big spoon at the two of them. Hey, don't go ganging up on me. Nora laughs. I make my way to the fridge and grab the milk and a stick of butter. Then I get the mixing bowl out of the dishwasher. I actually do remember how to make the icing. I think. Nora stays quiet as I start. After the sugar and butter are blended, I add the vanilla and milk. I carefully add 2 drops of green food coloring, and Nora claps her hands as I mix it in the silver bowl. After a minute or two of quiet, Nora stands up and walks over to me. She unwraps the cake and throws the saran wrap into the trash. I dip the spoon into the icing and spread it across the vanilla cake. Aw, look at you, decorating the cake all by yourself. You've come a long way, young grasshopper. I laugh at Nora's banter, and she nudges me with her shoulder. She looks at Lila. Who does she belong to? I didn't think to ask. She's my friend Posey's sister. Posey had to work this morning, so I offered to watch her. She'll be here in an hour or so to get her. Nora looks at me in that way that she does, and I feel like she is reading every thought of mine. My pulse quickens. You're something else, Landon Gibson, she tells me for the second time in 2 days. I flush under her compliment, and I don't even care if she notices. You're good with her. I point the green icing-covered spoon toward Lila. Me? Good with kids? She says with genuine surprise. Yes, I tell her, and press the tip of my index finger into her nose the way she pressed mine yesterday.
Hey, you stole that from me.
She turns her shoulders so she's facing me, only inches away from my face. I rub the spoon over the top of the cake, making sure to get the corners.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I look up at the ceiling, then back at the cake. Nora nudges me again.
Liar.
I'm a liar and you keep secrets. We're the same. The words are out before I can stop them, and I hate the way her face immediately changes from carefree to guarded.
That's not the same. Secrets and lies aren't the same,
Nora defends herself. I turn to her and drop the spoon onto the edge of the pan.
I didn't mean it like that, I'm sorry.
Nora doesn't look at me, but I can see her guard lowering with each breath. Finally, she speaks.
Promise me something?
Anything.
You won't try to fix me.
I hesitate.
Promise me.
She holds her ground.
Promise me that, and I'll promise not to tell lies.
I look at her. But you'll keep secrets? I ask her, already knowing the answer.
No lies.
I sigh in defeat. I don't want her to keep secrets.
Is this my only option? I ask, again, already knowing the answer.
She nods. I contemplate her offer for a few seconds. If this is the only way she'll let me get closer, it's all I've got.
I don't know if I'll be able to keep that promise, but this is my only chance.
With a deep breath, I nod slowly.
I promise not to try to fix you.
She exhales, and I suddenly realize that she'd been holding her breath.
Your turn.
She's hesitating this time.
I promise not to tell lies.
She holds out her pinky, and I loop mine through it.
It's a pact now. Don't break it, she warns.
I glance at Lila, sitting at the table, content with her car.
And what happens if I do? I ask her.
I disappear.
Nora's words cut at me, and I'm terrified by them because I know without a doubt, that she means them.
Nothing More was written by Anna Todd and read by Jason Carpenter. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Nothing More is available in print from Gallery. Also from Simon & Schuster Audio, After by Anna Todd, read by Elizabeth Louise, and After Ever Happy by Anna Todd. Read by Shane East and Elizabeth Louise.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.